Welcome to the coffee table. The time is 9:05 a.m. And in the studio, Jerry Trusinski from the Alaska Department of Public Health. Let me just read all the numbers and letters after your name on your card. So RN, BSN, MPA, Public Health Nurse V or 5?
Five,
okay. Regional Nurse Manager. All right, how would you introduce yourself?
I would say my name is Jerry Trusinski, and I'm a public health nurse.
And Olivia Erickson, you are the Homer public health nurse, right?
Yep, I'm one of soon to be three public health nurses in Homer.
And I want to start with you, Jerry, because you're visiting from out of town. I've known for a couple of weeks you were on your way. Thank you so much for being on the coffee table this morning. Oh, by the way, I'm your host, Kathleen Gustafson. Good morning. And can you give us a little bit of your history with the Alaska Department of Public Health?
Oh, sure. So I'm old. I'll preface my talk by saying I'm old. I've been around a long time. I've only been in Alaska for 25 years, but I got here as soon as I could managed county health departments in Wyoming for a dozen years before that. So I'm what we call a regional public health nurse manager. The region that I supervise includes Homer and Kenai and Seward, as well as the Mat-Su and the Copper Basin. And we did have a few budget cuts the last couple of years, and one of them was we went from four regions to three. So previous to this, I was supervising pretty much all of Western Alaska, and I retained the responsibility to supervise the Bethel office as well.
And you were telling me that, please fill in Lauren's last name.
Carol.
Lauren Carroll from the Homer Public Health Department.
Correct.
He was supposed to be here today, but you sent him away to Ketchikan.
I did. I needed a tuberculosis pro, and Lauren, among his other skill sets, is very knowledgeable in treating and investigating tuberculosis, and they had an outbreak in Ketchikan with a pretty critical multi-drug-resistant type of tuberculosis, and that's not something you fiddle with. They're short-staffed there, so they needed some extra help, and he was just the person to send.
And how many other people? Did you have to send people from all over the state?
Not yet. We'll send different people. I have a really good TB nurse in Kenai as well. And out in Bethel, I mean, if you were looking for tuberculosis in the state of Alaska, you'd probably either look in the YK region or in the Nome region. And so I have folks from those areas that could go and help out if they need to, too.
Okay. And what is the situation?
How many
cases?
Well, here's what you have to explain about tuberculosis is, so it's an old, old germ, right? It's been around. We have evidence of it in Egyptian mummies. It's probably been around as long as there's been people. So it's a disease that once it gets into your body, you become infected, but it doesn't mean that you can spread the germ yet. What typically happens is a person's body will create a little cell wall around the germ, and in most cases, if you're healthy, that's all that ever happens. The body has isolated the germ. It's not going to spread. But sometimes it does. A person might have health issues. We see it a lot with people as they grow older. They're harboring the germ, and all of a sudden it breaks loose from this little cyst, and it can start to infect other people, and that's what we call active tuberculosis. So active tuberculosis is when one person can cough it onto another person. And
makes me want to cough right now just hearing about it.
Right, and that's when it gets critical. Tuberculosis can be harbored in adults for a long time, and they can really, you know, be fairly healthy. But with children, it can really tear up lungs really quickly. And so, you know, once it's active, that's when we get on to a case and we investigate it. And what we have to do, think about if you dropped a pebble in a pool of water and the concentric circles kind of went outward. So we have to investigate who are the close contacts first, and we have to test them. And if they test positive, we get them on medication even before they become active cases. And then, you know, it keeps on going outward from there. This particular case is from a person who's an immigrant person, and I believe he's actually not in the state anymore. I believe he's hospitalized in Seattle, I think. But he had multi-drug resistant tuberculosis. And that's really serious because we're running out of drugs to treat it. And so the reason that, the germs can evolve, they can mutate to develop resistance to the antibiotics we have. So we really need to get on it. It's a public health emergency. And it really takes kind of specialized know-how to do that, to do the assessments and to get people onto treatment, do the teaching for the treatment. We have another case right now, interestingly enough, that I think is going to turn into a multi-drug resistant case from a person out in past Dutch Harbor on a floating processor plant and with about 175 people. And it was very sick and now hospitalized. But now we have to investigate all of those people. And so it's a real complex and labor-intensive kind of thing. You have to know what you're doing.
And I do want to get to, I want to move to what services are available for people in Homer today. But I'm definitely going to ask, I'm going to come back and ask Great. You a little more about what's going on around the state.
Okay.
And I just a brief conversation with you tells me there's some great historical perspective that we're going to get to in terms of public health in the state of Alaska. But right now, Olivia Erickson, can you talk to me about first of all, tell people where the Public Health Center is, when you're there, mm-hmm. and what can happen there.
Okay. So we are located right across the street from Two Sisters Bakery on Bunnell Street in this little kind of cream-colored building at the back. Most people remember or know where we are because they got their shots there when they were really little. So we're still in that same building. And the services we provide, we do a lot as public health nurses. We work with individuals, communities, and systems to protect and promote health. But a lot of people want to know more about what they can get from us specifically as individuals. Is that kind of what you're asking?
Well, it's part of it. I mean, mm-hmm. feel free to go down both those roads.
All right. So there are some individual services that we provide at Homer Public Health Center. So that would be immunizations for 0 through 29 years of age, well-child screens for 0 through 6. We do provide STI screening for 0 through 29 years of age.
So STI, let's break it down here.
Uh-huh.
STI, sexually transmitted infection.
Yes.
And also, what is a well child exam? What does consist of?
So well child exam, it's a comprehensive exam. The goal is to screen the child and to maybe pick up things that or ways to promote and protect their health now before things become an issue in the future. So this looks like a full comprehensive or a full physical, a developmental screen, and then screens for other things like tuberculosis, lead poisoning, or increased lead levels, immunization screening. Let's see what else on here. It's a pretty comprehensive exam. So typically, the best thing is for parents to take their kids to their healthcare provider to get those well-child screens, right? So if something does come up during the screen, their healthcare provider, their doctor, their nurse practitioner, their PA, who knows them well, can address that issue there. But if they don't have a healthcare provider
A significant chunk of the population that comes only to public health for healthcare?
There are a lot of people who come to Homer Public Health because they either don't have insurance or they don't have their deductible or what they would be paying out of pocket is very high. And so they'll come to us instead of going to a healthcare provider. Or maybe they're new to town. They don't know where to go. We're a great first place to stop by and we could talk about different services and get them connected to the medical home or insurance or the most appropriate place for them to receive care in Homer. You can kind of think of us as a gateway to healthcare in Homer.
And so you have memorandum of understanding with other healthcare providers and you refer them to other places?
So we'll kind of lay out, we'll refer them if it's appropriate, lay out kind of the options that are most appropriate for them.
And I see on my list sexually transmitted infection and HIV screening. How much of that do you do?
We in Homer are very, very blessed to have Kachemak Bay Family Planning Clinic. So we don't do a lot of sexually transmitted disease screening. Kachemak Bay Family Planning does a lot of those services for us. We still can't provide those services, though. If there's a reason that somebody can't go to their healthcare provider or to Kachemak Bay Family Planning, they can come to us.
And Kathleen, let me interject think about, we're a safety net. That's a good way to describe the individual services that happen. But we also really want to deal in prevention. So, it's like we used to say back in my Wyoming days, it's a lot cheaper to close the barn door before the cows get out than after. And so, we're trying to prevent things. So with STIs, we can do a lot of community education and we can work with our other partners. That's what we call primary prevention. So getting upstream and trying to prevent things before they happen. But
what kind of work goes on in Homer to raise awareness
about
STIs, about HIV? Mm-hmm. Also, we'll move on to flu shots. I'll get there. what kind of outreach do you do?
So we do outreach. We do some education. A lot of the STI and reproductive health prevention and promotion efforts are done by Kachemak Bay Family Planning, who receives Title X funding. And so they go to health
fairs. So birth control for Kachemak Bay Family
control,
Planning.
Birth control, STI screenings. They do a lot of outreach and education at health fairs as well and in different communities too.
And there's so many things on my list that you have to directly address. I mean, we'll get to addiction, but getting immunizations and getting school screenings, getting kids ready for school. Do people come to you directly to the health clinic for their immunizations?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And what about flu shots?
Yep. For 0 through 20, we can offer those for 0 through 29 years of age. Because of budget cuts in the recent years, we've had to limit our age group that we are able to serve with immunizations, but we still provide those.
And a person just calls and makes an appointment or just walks in?
Mm-hmm. Ideally, people would be able to get those services maybe from their healthcare provider, but if there's anything keeping them from getting the immunizations with their healthcare provider, they can come to us.
And if you have any questions for Olivia Erickson, Homer Public Health Nurse, or Jerry Trushinsky, who is the regional nurse manager, just in from out of town. So where are you usually?
Well, I have offices.
You probably travel a lot.
I do. My main office is actually in Mat-Su in Wasilla. I live out there. I have an office in Anchorage, too. Some of the public health nurses that we have, four of them that work out of our Anchorage office that travel all the way, I call it to the outer reaches of the galaxy, but all the way out to ADAC and out on the chain. So I work with those folks, too. So mostly I'm in Mat-Su when I'm not traveling.
So if you have a question for Nurse Jerry or Nurse Olivia, the number to call is 235-7721. Or you can email a question to info@kbbi.org. And Jerry, we spoke a little bit before the mics went on, and I would love to get your perspective on, you said, how many years in Alaska?
I've been here 25.
As a practicing nurse?
Yes.
And can you give us some perspective on what distinguishes Alaska Public Health from other states?
Okay.
And kind of what the budget has been like, what services have come and gone?
Okay. Well, I'm going to take you way back in time, because the first public health nurses in Alaska were probably Moravian missionaries out in the Bethel area in about the late 1800s. And, fast forward to we had public health nurses during territorial days, and mostly they dealt with tuberculosis. Back up until about 1959, tuberculosis was the leading cause of death, of all deaths, among our native population. And so, we had public health nurses that worked with that, dealt with that. And then, as we became a state, one of the most interesting things, the unique things about Alaska, as opposed to other states, is that our state constitution, Article 7, Section 4, actually says it's the state's responsibility to do public health. Now, I asked you before we were in here where you were from originally. And the reason I asked is because if you're from another state, typically public health is done, the responsibility responsibility is at the county government level. But, you know, our counties aren't counties. They're boroughs, and they don't have as many powers as counties. So public health nursing and public health, the whole division of public health, and we're just one section in the division, but the whole division of public health is a statewide organization. We are the people, we're the local presence of that statewide division of public health. We're the people on the ground. But we have 16 public health centers now. Up until a couple years ago, we had 22, and we have had to do some scaling back because of budget cuts. So go ahead.
You said Seward just got closed a couple of years ago?
Seward was closed 2 years ago. In addition to that, we've had to close other small public health offices in Fort Yukon, Galena. Haines closed last year, and I want to say Wrangell down in Southeast closed last year. And so, you know, we have had some, you know, some budget challenges. One of the things that a lot of the division of public health overall division is funded through federal grants. So, you know, there isn't a cost to the state of Alaska, except for public health nursing. We're different. We get our funding primarily from the state general fund, about 65% to 70%. And so what that means, that's the money that the legislature has wiggle room on to decide how they want to spend it. And so that's one of the reasons that we've had some cuts at the local level, is because those are general fund dollars that were cut. Public health nursing back up until about 1986 was, they were like nurse practitioners in that they traveled to villages with morphine, with antibiotics, with things like that. The State Nurse Practice Act changed at that time, and they limited those kinds of things to only nurse practitioners. And so then public health nursing began to do almost all of the well child exams that Medicaid pays for. I'm not sure if you know, folks, that if your child is on Medicaid, that they're entitled to well child exams on a periodic schedule. And public health nurses in those times in the late 80s and the 90s were really the only people doing that. Mostly private docs were so busy seeing just sick people, they didn't have time to see well kids. And then we transitioned out in the mid-2000s. We started to say, you know, we need to move farther upstream, and we need to do primary prevention. So we need to work at the community level with community education. With here in Homer, I would say that they're expert at working at the community level, and they're involved in some of your most important groups like the MAP group and like the Opioid Task Force, and, you know, very, very important Resiliency Coalition, very important groups, that having a public health nurse on that group is a great addition because of the perspective they have.
And that's Olivia herself.
That's Olivia or Lauren.
Or Lauren, right.
And we have a new nurse, Suzanne Daly, mm-hmm. coming in next week. I was hoping I'd get to meet her this week, but she hasn't quite got here yet. So we've moved from, you know, from being mini doctors to doing well child exams and immunizations. And we used to do almost all the immunizations of kids throughout the state in the 80s and 90s. But, you know, the provider, the private provider world has grown up around us too, and it's developed. And so now a lot of that stuff can be done by private providers.
Right. Or when you started, there really were no other options.
There weren't. Or it can be done by, you know, our federally qualified community health centers or our tribal organizations. So we work in partnership with those guys. We meet with them all the time and figure out how collectively can we do the best job for the big picture immunization rates. How can we collectively raise immunization rates in the Homer area, for instance? And so that's the kind of things that we're working more. It's a little more big picture. We still do the individual things as a safety net. We don't want to compete with our partners in the private sector, but we're there. We're another door. But, you know, we're working more with community and systems things too.
And you are visiting. What brought you to Homer?
Not just
the show, I'm sure.
I supervise a pretty large region, like I said. So I'm not one of those sit in your office behind a desk kind of supervisors. A lot of the things that I do when I come to a supervisory site visit, which is what I'm on today, I do a lot of training. We have a lot of our own kind of quality improvement systems that I need to follow up on and work with people. And also gives me a chance to meet with folks from the local community.
And if you have a question for Jerry Trushinsky or Olivia Erickson, call 235-7721 or email to info@kbbi.org.
And by the way, Kathleen, you've done a great job with my last name. I'm proud of you
really?
For that.
Really? I got it? Okay.
You bet.
And Olivia, I know your history isn't quite so detailed, or a long history anyway, but I would love to hear a little bit about your history as a nurse in training in the state of Alaska.
Okay. So I actually graduated from a school in California, Azusa Pacific University. I came up to Anchorage back home because I'm actually from Homer. So I went back to Anchorage, got a hospital experience at Alaska Regional Hospital, and then I'd always had an interest in public health and community health. I like to look at the bigger picture, which is what we do here at Homer Public Health especially. We look at the whole big picture and try to figure out how can we work with the community to protect and improve the health of our of the people who live there. And so that had always been a passion of mine, and this job came up in Homer, so I moved back home. The first year, I was a public health nurse one, and so that's basically a year-long orientation, because in nursing school, you get a little bit of a taste of what community health is and community health nursing is, but you don't really receive comprehensive training in comparison to what I received in that first year of training as a public health nurse one. So it was a lot of learning about immunizations, tuberculosis, infectious disease management, and well child exams, STI, sexually transmitted infections prevention and treatment. And then now I'm a public health nurse two, which basically means that I've completed my orientation. I've been a public health nurse two now for a year. So I've spent 2 years in public health at Homer.
And a lot of, well, when I see you, you're collaborating with the Resiliency mm-hmm. Coalition, with MAP. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've seen you. I didn't go to the health fair. Mm-hmm. I'll make it next year. Were you there?
Yes, I was at the health fair.
What were you doing there?
So we had a booth on the pertussis outbreak that happened in early, like, 2016. So we talked about what happened in 2000. We had 61 cases of whooping cough or pertussis in our area.
61.
Mm-hmm. In 2016. And so we kind of talked about the public health nurse role in helping to mitigate that outbreak. And then also what the whole public health system did. So we are just one little piece of the public health system here in Homer. Public health nurses, one of our big jobs is to work at the systems level to protect and improve health. And that means working with all the other partners to make sure our public health system is functioning well to protect and promote health. So during that outbreak, we worked with the section of epidemiology that monitors whooping cough in the state. And then we worked with the different medical providers who are diagnosing whooping cough. We worked with schools. We worked with individuals. We worked with families, all to try to educate about pertussis and to prevent the spread. So it was a really great learning experience. That's one thing that we talked about at the health fair. We also partnered with the Southern Kenai Peninsula Immunization Coalition and just offered some information on how vaccines work and common vaccine questions or immunization questions. And then also partnered with the Safe Families for Children program to just offer education about and opportunities for volunteering through that program.
And I might add, Olivia is too modest to say this, but she is very instrumental in starting both of those last two programs she mentioned. And that's what public health nurses do, is we can help to bring people together to address some community needs. I always say, you know, because I have hiring managers that I supervise, and I say, here's the one thing you need to do. You need to get a hold of their kindergarten records. You know why? Because we need to see where it says plays well with others. That's the most important thing, that everything we do is based on relationships.
And I'm glad you brought up, Olivia, I'm glad you brought up that there are so many systems in place. Mm-hmm. Because you both, and I expect public health in general, is a highly stratified environment. All I have to do is look at your cards and all the numbers and letters after your names. Can you talk a little bit about how the system is organized?
Yeah. So the state of Alaska has, can't think off the top of my head how many departments. I want to say somewhere between 8 and 11 different big departments. And our department is the Department of Health and Social Services. Our commissioner is Valerie Davidson, who outstanding commissioner. She's, from the YK region. She's UPIC. She's an attorney. She's been a general.
When can we get her on?
She would be great. She is such a humble, nice, regular person. So she's been excellent as a commissioner. In the Department of Health and Social Services, there's like the division. We break them down then into divisions. There's the Division of Behavioral Health. There's Office of Children's Services. There's a bunch of different divisions. We are the Division of Public Health. Our division director is Dr. Jay Butler. And so Dr. Butler supervises the division with 8 or 9 sections. And public health nursing is one of those sections. So we're statewide, but we work under a larger division. Our partners in the division, Olivia mentioned the section of epidemiology. So those are kind of our disease central, if you will. And just to back up in terms of statute, really public health exists in statute primarily to prevent the spread of communicable diseases. That's the main thing, if you read public health law in Alaska, that we're all about. Of course, there's a lot of other things that we work on too, preventing child abuse or, other things. But most things will revolve around
communicable disease.
So.
Except, I would imagine one of the bigger exceptions, including domestic violence, is addiction.
Yeah.
But is addiction theoretical, or is it communicable?
Addiction's not communicable, though.
There's something about it, though.
It may be genetic, though, and it certainly is a challenge to our overall health system. I mean, one of the things that we do in public health is we either start or participate in community health assessments around the state, and every community health assessment around the state identifies 2 or 3 universal problems, and they are substance abuse and, behavioral health issues and perhaps child abuse. So it's all interrelated. And right now, as we were talking, with addiction, opioid overdoses are the leading cause of death of people 30 and under right now. So it is a public health crisis in that sense. And the other thing is that, probably right now, state of Alaska legislature is in special session, right? They're dealing with a crime bill. Almost 70 to 80% of property crimes are probably related around addiction. So it's a bigger picture thing, and it's more than just that individual and what they're struggling with.
All right, we're going to move on to that topic after the break. It's time for a short break. You're listening to The Coffee Table on KBBI AM 890 Homer. I'm Kathleen Gustafson. Guests are Olivia Erickson and Jerry Trushinsky from the Alaska Department of Public Health. The time is 9:32. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
We'll be right back.
This is The Coffee Table on KBBI AM 890 Homer. The time is 9:36 a.m. And in the studio, Jerry Trushinsky, the Regional Nurse Manager, South Central Region for the State of Alaska Department of Health, Division of Public Health.
Division of Public Health.
That's how I would say. And Olivia Erickson, Homer Public Health Nurse. Welcome and thank you both for being here. The next topic I want to move on in terms of public health is addiction, because it must be a lot of the work that you do. I know there were just new numbers released. I heard them on public radio that epidemiology had released numbers on meth addiction.
Right.
But I would like for you to give me an overview of what public health considers their business when it comes to addiction.
Sure. So I'll preface it by saying that all around the state, public health and their partners do what we call community health assessments or community health needs assessments. In every one I've ever participated in, and actually this was true way back in my Wyoming days too, the most critical things identified in the community were almost always substance abuse, behavior health, child abuse. You know, it was like you could send it in ahead of time. That's what the community would be concerned with. And so what I would say about substance abuse, and I would include, you know, you mentioned meth, of course, and I don't know, you know, meth is the devil. I mean, it's so addictive. And, you know, of course, we've had, you know, an opioid epidemic all over the country. People may not realize that right now overdoses are the leading cause of death for people under 30. And so, you know, that situation. But here's the elephant in the room, as I was talking with you about earlier, and it's alcohol abuse. So think about it from a big picture. Everything that we do in public health relates to substance abuse. And, you know, it permeates everything. It affects our child abuse rates. It affects all kinds of other rates. And I'm going to let Olivia talk a little bit about research that was done 25 or 30 years ago called the ACEs research, Adverse Childhood Experiences Research. So she can talk about that in a minute. But kind of back to your question. So we're kind of reaping what we sow, if you will, because maybe we didn't invest 30 years ago far enough upstream to prevent the kinds of issues we're dealing with all kinds of substance abuse today. I think that, Kathleen, you said that you will post a website from the Division of Public Health on opioids, and you can Google it right now. If you went to alaska.gov and Googled opioids, you could find the page from the Division of Public Health. But, you know, based on recent research, thanks to MRIs and other technology, one of the things that we're learning about addiction now is that we used to think that it was a moral failing. It was a character flaw. But one of the things we're learning about addiction now is that we know it affects different people differently. One person can maybe, you know, drink when they're in college and then stop drinking and never have a drink again. Another person can't. We don't really know why that is yet. But, you know, one of the things that we do know about addiction is that it is very similar. If you look at it, the MRIs, very, very similar to traumatic brain injury. And so, you know, it's you know, we're hearing a lot in the NFL about, you know, traumatic brain injuries that those folks have. Traumatic brain injury from addiction is significant too. And there's a YouTube clip on that Division of Public Health opioid page from a homegrown Alaska psychiatrist by the name of Dr. Joshua Sunkus. And Dr. Sunkus was practicing in Fairbanks for a long time. Now he's in Anchorage. But he's explaining the physiology of why this is a traumatic brain injury. And that changes how we try to treat it instead of, you know, blaming the person. Because even somebody that for whatever reason uses an opioid for the first time, they didn't write down on their goal sheet, I'm going to become addicted to opioids. And in fact, we know from the nationwide, the opioid epidemic, that very, very many, up to 70 to 75% of people who are now addicts got their start from prescriptions.
So there is a caller on the line with a question or a comment. Jeff, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Kathleen. And I'm so thankful to Olivia and Jerry for dedicating their life to what they're doing. And Kathleen for dedicating hers to being there all the time. And another note here is, Jerry, you're not getting older. I mean, you're not getting old. You're getting older.
Thank you.
I can tell by the way you talk, you are not getting old. It's a state of mind. One big issue, I know this isn't going to happen overnight, is I ran this by somebody from the building once, but is that building, the public health building, it's in the tidal wave zone. Someone claimed, yeah, they can get out of there, but you know, you might need that building per the tidal wave. But that's not my my main point. Is I've been by one issue with the city council, present and past, and I'm wore out on this issue with them, and I was going to go to you people. And it has to do with a sign down on Bishop's Beach, the placement of the sign that talks about the treated fecal material from the city, which is a stone's throw off of Bishop's Beach there. And I've talked to many, several mothers and people with their kids swimming in there, and obviously it'd be a, you know, incoming tide. And that sign, and they're not aware of that, you know, that sign is planted way off in the corner of the parking lot. And all the don't feed the bird signs and da-da-da have the prime time placement. And then one of my last tries in getting that sign moved, I got some lame excuse from a guy named Todd that he's with the city somewhere there. I don't have time to run all this stuff down. And anyway, and then something I've learned as well is somebody has done study the gull feces and finding antibiotic resistant E. coli in gull poop. So maybe there, you know, there's another issue. And then how about the chemicals that the fecal material is treated with? Anyway, it's just so simple to move that sign. And I can't seem to get anybody excited about it.
Well, Jeff, I'm gonna ask Jerry to address the broader topic of is pollution environmental factors. Is that a public health?
Well, it's the resistant. I have a biological background. I had a mother that was a nurse, great nurse. It's the resistant spores, et cetera. And as I've learned, that antibiotics can run right on through a sewage plant and, you know, be active yet.
So what do you think, Jerry?
Well, thanks for your call, Jeff, and I appreciate your concern. You're right to be concerned about that. In 1970, 71, when the Environmental Protection Agency was created by the Nixon administration. Incidentally, the Secretary of the Interior at that time was Wally Hickel. He had been our governor and then became Secretary of the Interior. But the state health department split away and divided up their responsibilities for environmental health issues. And so those issues are now done by the Department of Environmental Conservation, DEC. So, Jeff, I don't know if you've touched base with them, but that would be at the, you know, the point source of pollution. That would be, you know, people to work with. But here's another thing that I'd recommend. I think you're right in your concern, but it sounds like you maybe need more folks to help you. I remember Garrison Keillor from Public Radio once said that there are a few things that can stop a grandmother that means business. So I would say that keep working with the city council, because if you get enough people to realize, you know, the concern over it, you can get things changed. Now, the other side of it is unfortunately in our American culture, we tend to be more reactive than proactive. And so typically you don't get a lot of policy changes until after, like I said earlier, the cows get out of the barn. We have had outbreaks of not necessarily E. coli from gulls, but out in the Waikiki area, sometimes people get the drinking water from the rainwater. And they've had other cryptosporidium and other diseases that were spread from gulls that were on the roof. So, you know, you're very correct that's a good way to catch some of these things, and it's a concern. But I would just say, don't give up on your concern.
Well, you're talking about grandmother. Well, I found out I'm a grandfather, but Yeah, I've only got so much time. I've got other things to do, and I mean, I've been past and present city council and other issues I've dealt with, borough, city. I'm pretty much turned off. I quit voting again. Mm. It's like, it's just the placement of the sign. Well, I talked to a lady in San Francisco. It's a similar issue, and you know, they can't have a sign talking about fecal material for tourists to stare at. Right. You know, they got it hidden over in the corner of that parking lot. And anyway,
thank you for calling. And so it sounds like the Department of Environmental Conservation. I hate to send you down another road, but that sounds like it. Thank you, Jerry, for addressing the question. But do you have any final comments, Jeff? I got to keep moving.
Yeah. Well, if nothing else, at least some of the people that are listening can pass this along. So. And I don't go to Bishop Beach much anymore. I stay away from there. Too much traffic. But is to where more people now can maybe spread the word about that sign, to keep kids from wallowing around in that stuff until maybe I'll find some more time and talk to DEC. Okay. But thanks for the forum.
Thanks so much for calling.
Thanks, Kathleen. And thanks, Jerry and Olivia. To be careful out there.
Okay.
Bye.
And so while we're on the subject, we'll get back to the community health assessment and a little more on addiction. But while we're on the subject of a tidal wave wiping out the public health offices, which are on Bunnell, and what's the name of that street that turns into the beach? I used to know the name. But anyway, next to Two Sisters on Bunnell Street, right as you turn onto Bishop's Beach.
Right, but don't come if there's a tidal wave coming.
While we're on the subject, also on your list of things that public health is responsible for is emergency response and preparedness. So what happens if there's a natural disaster?
Well, interesting you should ask that, because I think that public health before 911 was not traditionally involved in emergency preparedness. But if you remember, about 3 weeks after 911 happened, we also had a big anthrax scare. And anthrax is one of those types of, can be a bioterrorism weapon. In fact, that's how it was used at that time. I always say that if you see a crop duster flying low in the state of Alaska, you might be thinking about, bioterrorism. But what I tell our emergency services people, because we just weren't a part of any of that planning before that happened, I always tell them this. I say it's great to be discovered after all these years, because we had always been there, but we hadn't worked with them in partnership. Think about all of the other potential disasters, and not just the physical disasters. And, I think Jeff is very right to talk about, a tidal wave. We actually have what we call a COOP plan, or a continuance of operation plan, that we would still be able to provide services. We just would be able to pick up and move and provide.
Would you go to the high school? Is that in your plan?
I don't know exactly. What
I just remember when I worked for the high school theater that.
And very well could have been. I don't know what specifics are, but I know each place has their own COOP plan. They develop it here locally. Mm-hmm. But we also have our role in a public health emergency or a preparedness emergency has mostly to do with dispensing of medications. So we have one of the things we do is we do what we call POD exercises, or point of dispensing exercises. So again, think about if we had a real severe type of flu here, since we've been talking about flu shots a little bit. We have a real severe type of flu, and probably about 10 years ago, we did have a novel type of flu, or called H1N1. And, if we had a real severe type of flu here, we'd need to, have a mass clinic to vaccinate people. And we're the people that engineer that. We work with our community partners, so we work with the hospital and the other providers. But we do those kinds of exercises all over the state. In our region this year, we did a big exercise in Bethel, with that community. And then we also, in my region, are doing some exercises in Mat-Su. I expect next year, I hope that Homer will be, they were working on the planning stages of doing a big exercise here this year, but it's pretty complicated. And so we're hoping that them and perhaps Kenai can do that next year. They did participate in a big exercise in Seward as well. So that's kind of our role with emergency preparedness. And we do have a preparedness section. They work with both the EMTs and just with communities to plan for preparedness in our Division of Public Health. So it is a core function of the Division of Public Health.
And Olivia, I want to get back to you. Let's talk about the local community health assessment and who you work with and what you find and what you do with your findings. Mm-hmm. Also, Jerry had talked a little bit about ACEs, Adverse Childhood Experiences, which I believe goes into your community health assessment.
Yeah. Yeah. So our community health assessment is completed with the MAP coalition. So Mobilizing for Action Through Planning and Partnership. This coalition helps assure that a community health assessment is done in our area. And so it's a group of health leaders within our community that guide this coalition to ensure that this health assessment is done. The big things that they've seen on our health assessment, like Jerry said,
you can phone it in, right?
Yeah, behavioral health, addiction, substance use, and then keeping kids safe and promoting family resilience. So that was kind of the big goal in the previous. After they looked at this whole health assessment, they develop a community health improvement plan or a CHIP, and then all of these organizations in this coalition work together to kind of achieve some of these goals of improving health. And so, the MAP coalition actually also acts as kind of like a framework for other coalitions. So it's kind of like an umbrella organization, or not organization, but coalition that supports the Resiliency Coalition, and it supports the Immunization Coalition, because that was another big health concern that came out of our community health assessment, was that our community is susceptible to vaccine and communicable diseases, or vaccine preventable and communicable diseases. So that coalition kind of formed out of that assessment. And then the opioid task force as well kind of falls under that umbrella, and the MAP coalition supports their efforts to improve health.
That's a lot of when I communicate with you. So I probably have an unrealistic idea of how much time you spend on it, but because that's when I see you.
Yeah.
But have you used Narcan?
I have not
personally
used it. No.
What is it?
So Narcan is the other name for that is naloxone, and it is reverses the effects of opioids. So if you hear about opioid overdose response kits or Narcan kits, those are the kits that are being distributed to people who are either at risk or are likely to come in contact with somebody who has overdosed from an opioid.
And they're being distributed by the state of Alaska?
Yes, through Project Hope. It's part under the Division of Public Health. And then the section of public health nursing is also kind of assisting to distribute those kits where appropriate. Like if there's nobody else in the community distributing those kits, we can help do that. And also link people to different trainings on opioid and addiction and provide those if there's nobody else in the community who is providing education on opioid and addiction and medication-assisted treatment. For example, Dr. Sarah Spencer does a lot of our education in this area on addiction and a lot of the distribution of opioid response kits. So we often refer people to her. If she couldn't complete that education or those kits, we could do that.
Well, Olivia Erickson, Homer Public Health Nurse, thank you for being here. It is that time of the hour when I ask you to remind people of where you are and a little bit of how they can find you.
Great. So we are across the street from Two Sisters down by Bishop's Beach. We're there from 8:30 to 5 Monday through Friday. Sometimes we take a lunch around noon, typically, but you should be able to get a hold of a nurse if you need one. Typically, we are see people on Tuesdays and Thursdays for clinic appointments, but we can work around that if there's some major barriers to you receiving care. You can come to us for immunizations, well child screens, TB screens, and Narcan kits as well. You can get those on a walk-in basis. And if you have any questions about our services, just call, stop, drop in, or any major community health concerns, too. We want to hear about them. And if we can't partner with you, we probably know somebody who is also concerned, and we can link you with that person and encourage that health promotion in our community. That's one of the biggest things that we do, really, is just connect people.
And thank you so much for being here, Olivia Erickson. Jerry Trzynski, what do you have any final thoughts after the hour? Thank you so much for coming.
Well, one of the things I come across a lot in terms of just public health in general is that I try to explain to people that public health is what economists call a public good. Now, that's different than a private good. That's different than like your automobile. You purchased your automobile, it's for your use, you benefit from it. But a public good is something that, you know, everybody has to pay into, so that's why it's generally a government-run function. But everybody benefits. So even if I don't have children in school, I benefit from a well-educated population. It's a public good. Even if I don't have children that need immunizations, I benefit when every child gets their immunizations, because not only is that child protected, but they can't spread the disease to me. It's a public good, and that's why it's in the state constitution, Article 7, Section 4, is our founding fathers recognized that, in fact, it was a public good. So that's one of the things I try to explain to people about public health.
Well, thanks for being here today. You have been listening to The Coffee Table on KBBI AM 890 Homer. Guests Olivia Erickson and Jerry Trzynski from the Alaska Department of Public Health. Also, Olivia is a local Homer public health nurse. So the time is 9:58 a.m. for the Homer area today. Sunny skies and a high near 38 degrees. Southwest wind around 5 miles per hour, becoming north in the afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 30 degrees. Northeast wind around 5 miles per hour, becoming calm after midnight. And on Kachemak Bay today, southwest wind 10 knots, seas 2 feet. Tonight, north wind 10 knots, seas 2 feet. In Anchor Point, clear skies and 27 degrees. In Anchorage, clear skies and 17. And in Soldotna, light snow and 14 degrees. At the airport in Homer, clear skies and 34 degrees. Seldovia District low tide is coming up in about an hour at 11:01 this morning, a 3.2-foot low on Kachemak Bay. Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is coming up next. The time is 9:59 a.m. Good morning.